black pall of smoke rising, and then just all hell breaks loose. Kids screaming, and I grab this little girl, and I'm holding her in my arms. I'm like, it's gonna be okay. The explosion, like, sucked the air right out of my lungs. I didn't even realize that she had lost her leg, basically below the knee. And I just remember, like, waking up on this couch and blinking my eyes open. And I mean, I just had like this earth-shattering headache and sat up and like world was spinning and I'm like looking around and, you know, I'm staggering over to the television set, half awake, turn it on just in time to see an airplane crash into the World Trade Center. I remember exactly where I was, what I was doing, what I was wearing, like what classes I had that day. And I experienced this range of different emotions oscillating back and forth between fear and righteous indignation and anger. You know, I remember thinking what my mom used to tell me, and, you know, two most important days of your life are the day that you're born and the day that you figure out why. And someday, Sean, you'll figure out like what you're intended to do, what path you're supposed to walk. Just keep trying to do the right thing for the right reasons. I was really lucky to come from a household with two great parents. I just believed that I knew exactly why God had put me on this earth, and that was to serve this country. And I wanted to be a part of America's collective response. You know, I wanted to get in the fight right away. I wanted to join the infantry because I wanted to be on the front lines. And then I ended up like going home and talked to my parents about it. My dad and I got in this huge knockdown, drag out argument because my dad was a Naval Academy guy. He's like, wait a second, no, you don't understand the military, right? There's enlisted non-commissioned officer, and then there's officer corps. Like, you're halfway through college, Sean, just stick with it. We're driving back up to Clarion University. And I just remember saying to my dad when we was all quiet, I'm like, Dad, you know, I just want to serve my country. We were just attacked. I just want to get in the fight. You know, what have you ever done to be proud of in your life? You quit the Naval Academy. And he just paused for a while and he said, Sean, I have, you know, four things that I'm most proud of in the world. And that is you, your younger sister, and your two younger brothers. Come to find out that he ended up leaving the Naval Academy because of me. He said to me, I just didn't want to say to my kid, like, hey, have a good first grade year. I'll see you in second grade. I took his advice and I applied to the two-year scholarship option. You had to be at the top of your class in college, and then you had to be at the top of your ROTC class. And then you had to graduate in the top third of what you call your advanced camp class. You do a list, right? Like, I want infantry first, I wanted armor second, I wanted artillery third, and air defense, all the combat arms branches, what I put there. I get my fourth choice, air defense artillery. How is this possible? You know what, I don't care. I'm gonna do everything I can to, you know, bust my ass. So every week for 20 weeks, I strolled my ass into my commander's office, put that branch transfer paperwork, send it up to the Army, rejected. Every single week for 20 weeks. I graduate air defense artillery officer basic course. I go to airborne school, get my airborne wings as an air defense artillery officer. And then I go home for Christmas leave and like I'm crying in my beer, I failed, all these branch transfer packets for nothing. So like I'm drinking, I'm eating Christmas cookies, I'm getting out of shape, I'm getting ready to go to my next duty assignment, which is Fort Campbell as an air defense artillery officer. And no joke, the day before I was supposed to PCS to Fort Campbell, I get a call, and I'll never forget this, from a guy named Jack Fish, who is the air defense artillery branch manager. And he goes, well, Sean, congratulations, 30 plus branch transfer packets and more. Your branch transfer to infantry has been approved. You're going to Ranger school in a month. No infantry training. I mean, outside of the stuff that you just learn along the way. And I fail the first time through. Fourth Ranger training brigade commander's like trying to kick me out. I'm like, I ain't going anywhere, sir. I'm not leaving. I don't care. Come hell or high water, I'm staying here. There's nothing you can do to kick me out of this school. So he begrudgingly like kicks me over to this rundown barracks with a couple of other Ranger candidates that are there, waiting for the next class to start, and then I made it straight through, and then I went to the 10th Mountain Division up at Fort Drum. And I get this infantry platoon that was named the Outlaw Platoon, and that's how it all started. I get to my unit, my battalion commander, Chris Toner, looks at me, he's like, I don't see like anything about the infantry officer basic course here on your record. And he looks at my shoulder, he's like, well, you got your Ranger tab, that's good enough for me. You're going down to Bravo Company. And you're taking over. Man, my platoon was like the bad news bears of my battalion. Like, we couldn't get anything right in training, but we never quit. We ended up going to Paktika province. We found that out a few months in advance. It was a fairly new base, but we were probably about 25 minutes north of Firebase Shkin, which was a special operations base, the border checkpoint between Afghanistan and Pakistan, where they have like international summit meetings, is co-located there. And that's where our base was, like right on the border. And we get there, our bird lands. We're like on the helicopter landing zone, ramp falls, storm out the back. Brown out of dust, it's chaos. People are like throwing equipment, birds trying to get off the HLZ fast. And like, you could hear over the chaos of those rotors, this thud, like directly to our east from the mountains that separated Afghanistan from Pakistan. And you could hear this explosion just tear over the bird. Like you could hear it just shoom, and you could hear it land just west of our base with like this dull thud. You hear the impact and then you feel it, whoomp. And everybody like on the HLZ looks, and we just see this like very thin black pall of smoke rising, and then just all hell breaks loose. Start scrambling for the base. And you know, I didn't know what the hell was going on. It was the first time I've ever been shot at in my life. So I get there in combat, like you gotta know, because your people are looking to you to be decisive and make a decision. And the reality was, I just did not know. And so like, I felt very inadequate in those first moments after we got attacked. Ryan Kennedy comes up to me, and he's the 173rd Airborne guy. He goes, sir, we need every available body at the front gate. We need you here like yesterday. Can you help? And I'm like, absolutely. And so like, we're hauling ass after this column of American soldiers running at the front gate. We get to the front gate, and it's like any gated community you'd see here in America. I get there and I see what could have been an image just straight from hell. And it's just like these probably 20 or 30 Afghans carrying the broken and bloodied bodies of small kids. One of the American soldiers that were there, I'm like, what the hell is going on? This kid goes to me, he must have been like 18, 19 years old. It's like, those rockets that the enemy's shooting at us, because they didn't stop. It wasn't just one, they're still coming in. He's like, well, they're missing us, but they landed in the school, the Afghan school that's just west of our base, and hit a playground. And all these kids were there out playing. What the hell's going on? Let's get this gate open. Let's help these kids. And then there was like discussion of like, wait, we can't because suicide bombers, you know, like the ethical quandary that suicide attacks put you in, like in those moments, like, you know, everything is turned on its head in combat. We throw this gate open. There's like this fight over the kids, and our interpreter looks, hey, they won't let us take any of the girls. We have to promise to take the boys first. And it's like, this is crazy. Like, that's not how we operate in America. You see kids that are hurt, wounded, killed, like you are risking everything to save them. It doesn't matter. Like, that's how we're wired. And so we throw the gate open. We just start grabbing kids. And it was just chaos, right? And kids screaming. And I grab this little girl and I'm holding her in my arms. And I look down and I'm like, hey, it's going to be okay. And she's like totally beside herself, petrified, tears streaming down her face. She has this like dark auburn hair, like these bright jade green eyes. And like, I'm like, it's going to be okay. She can't understand me. Like, if I could describe that moment, it's like looking into like a kaleidoscope and turning it, and you're like right in the middle. Like, everything else is happening around you almost like that. Because I like think back on that moment all the time, and it's like, it's like not a clean memory, if that makes sense. Like, it was just like sensory overload in every possible way. And so I get this girl and I'm like turning around and I'm like running with her back to the aid station. And after a few steps, it felt like there was lead in my lungs and in every muscle of my body. There was just not enough oxygen in the air for me to run that, what could have been 100, 150 yards from the gate to our aid station. I mean, it became manifestly apparent to me in that moment that like I was, even though I was in good shape, I wasn't in Afghanistan fighting shape. And all the while, these rockets are still coming in, man. Like, they're just like, and they're walking them on target. So they had like unsophisticated launchers where they would see where one would land, and it was like Kentucky windage to them. They'd adjust their launcher and fire again, and so they were just kind of getting closer. Now at this point, like we're like halfway to the aid station and they're starting to like land in our base. And one lands close to me. The explosion like sucked the air right out of my lungs. I couldn't breathe. Like, there was nothing in my lungs to breathe. And I just remember like inhaling this like black acrid smoke. And I stand up and I turn and try to like run through this smoke. And like, I'm thinking, I just feel this like warmth spread out on my right leg. And I'm like, oh my God. It's like the first day in Afghanistan and I'm already hit. And then I start getting worried, like, where am I hit? It's on my lower, my right hip. And I look down, trying to furiously pat down to find the source of this injury because like I'm starting to panic. And I put my right hand on this bony fragment of this little girl's leg, right where her leg should have been, but it wasn't. In the chaos of the moment at the front gate of trying to scoop up this little girl, I didn't even realize that she had lost her leg basically below the knee. I almost like lost it right then and there. I remember like getting her into the aid station, like these bright white lights and like these aluminum shiny metal tables. And I just found an empty one and looking as I laid her down, everyone's like kind of looking at me like I'm crazy. And I realized that the girl had already died at that point in my life, man. Like I had experienced death of family members that I loved, but I had never been that close to it. Well, like I just didn't even realize any of it. I mean, it was just so crazy. Cause at this point I was like, when I say I was in shock, like I kind of mean, like I was still conscious and stuff. And at that point, like all of our training sort of takes over where you're just like on autopilot, I guess, a little bit. And I remember scooping this little girl up and walking her back to her dad, giving her to her dad. And her dad like nods his head and like, thank you for trying, and just turns and walks away. And as I'm walking back to the aid station, at this time, like the rocket attack had ended. And Kennedy was like, hey man, welcome to Afghanistan. And that was it. I remember taking that uniform that was just totally destroyed and throwing it on this burn pit that we had that was like out close to the HLZ out to the east, like later in the evening. That moment was the beginning of a metamorphosis in me. There's something inside you, and I don't know what it is, when you start experiencing things like that, like the azimuth changes, right? Like you're something deeply inside your soul just changes. And that was the start of it for me. And that moment was really like a microcosm of my entire time there. That was the hardest part about the deployment. Like we killed a lot of bad guys over there, man. Like we really did. And I don't lose a wink of sleep over it. The tough part about it was seeing the kids trapped in the middle of this. And I think about this every single day. Like I remember driving around, like patrolling through the mountains. We came upon this like mountain village. And I see this like group of like little kids, like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, just they're all like out in their front yards. These kids are like running around in bare feet, covered in dirt. And these kids are just kicking around a half deflated soccer ball. And they were just loving life, man. They were just like laughing hysterically. Like, and I just think like these kids could easily be in America. Like they don't recognize that there's a war on. They don't recognize that they're even trapped in the middle. Those little kids, that's what keeps me up at night. I went into combat, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, 22-year-old kid, wanting to make a difference in the world, wanting to take the fight to the enemy. But what combat does to you as a person, and I think in many ways, this is why families don't recognize their loved ones when they come home. And this isn't like a negative thing. It's too often portrayed in the media and in Hollywood as like a negative metamorphosis, right? But it's not. Like, there are positive elements to it too, but my point is that combat changes you in a lot of ways. And for me, that metamorphosis from civilian to combat veteran or warrior happened on my first day.
And that's just day one.
That's just day one. 485 days in a row. Absolutely crazy. Longest combat deployment in global war on terror history in Afghanistan right there. Absolutely nuts.
There's so many powerful stories in here, but that one, is pretty eye-opening.